your turn. Weekday 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday It's Your Turn program. We have a good program today. We're going to be talking about this month of April being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we'll be chatting about that in some detail on the first portion of the program today. And then later we'll be chatting with Rue Snyder. Rue is a Butler native. He is a singer-songwriter, and he's well into that career. In fact, he's on the road. He'll be chatting with us by telephone from, I'm not sure where. The last time I talked to to double-check our arrangements for today, I think he was in Texas, in Austin, at some kind of a music gathering down there. So he'll be chatting with us. He's going to be in Butler to present a concert this Saturday night at the Butler Little Theater. So we'll be chatting with him a little bit later on the program. First, though, we welcome Gloria Armstrong, who is a medical advocate specialist for VOICE, the Victim Outreach Intervention Center here in Butler. Gloria, good to see you again. Nice to have you back with us.
Thank you. It's good to be back, Dave.
We are going to be talking about sexual assault today because the month of April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and there's a campaign going on. In fact, a little lapel pin that Gloria shared with me before we went on the air today. It's kind of like a, I don't know, is that green? Is that teal ribbon?
That's right, Dave. It is teal, and teal is the awareness ribbon color for sexual assault.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of nice. I didn't know that. Yeah. Sexual assault. Let's define terms before we do anything else. I'm sure there are some people who think of sexual assault. By the way, folks, this is not an easy thing to talk about. We understand that. We're doing it because it's important. It's very important that we talk about this. I suppose some people would think sexual assault is maybe certainly rape, maybe groping, and, well, maybe that's about it. You know, some other stuff, not so good, but not really sexual assault. We have to change that thinking, don't we, Gloria?
We really do, and that's what the month of April is all about. It's about changing public awareness and educating people about the fact that sexual assault entails so many more beliefs and ways of thinking and actions, actually. Mm-hmm. And we really need to change the public's perception of that. I mean, it can cover like sexist attitudes, sexual harassment, and certainly unwanted touching and unwanted sexual acts, but it does include rape, and even sometimes it results in murder. Mm. So there's a wide range of activities and actions that are considered in sexual assault.
So it's more of a wider focus than many folks would realize at first blush. It certainly includes rape and groping, but
right.
It goes much further than that.
Right. And, you know, it's happening in homes and businesses. It's happening in churches, unfortunately. We've seen it with coaches.
Schools, yeah, that's what I was going to say.
With schools, it's been unfortunately prominent mm-hmm. in the news lately. It seems to be that perpetrators of this kind of violence know where to go to have contact with people that are vulnerable, people of all ages that are vulnerable, children, teens, college age, men, women, and LGBT community people as well.
The Gloria has shared a great deal of research and statistics with me, some of which are surprising, some of them are alarming. One of the surprising things, and I saw this pretty much across the board, whether we were talking about sexual assault with kids or with teens or with women or with men or whatever. Number one, in most cases, the victim knows the person who
Isn't
is
that
assaulting
surprising?
Them. And in many cases, especially with children and teens, it's a family member,
it
which
can.
Is really, we don't think of that. We think of people in positions of trust, like a teacher or a coach or a clergy or something like that. We don't think that most of it is by family members, though, do we?
About 40% of these kind of crimes are perpetrated by family members or friends of family, a caregiver that's very close to the family. And the reason that it's so prevalent and the reason that it's so difficult to talk about and report is because these acts happen behind closed doors. They happen where a victim is most vulnerable and where the perpetrator is the least likely to get caught.
And there is also a sense of shame in many cases on the part of the victim, obviously misplaced, but it's there. And a lot of perpetrators count on that so that the victim won't say anything, won't ever report what has happened.
And across the board, all ages. That's exactly right, Dave. The perpetrator actually has a systematic approach to, for the most part, especially with children, to get the children to trust them. And they do this through a process that's called grooming. And the grooming involves us paying very special attention to the child, attending sports activities, art activities, maybe even coaching a sports event or a team, buying them gifts, sometimes very lavish and sometimes very simple things. They pay very close attention to what that child likes. And so they get the child to trust them by, you know, spending time with them and buying them things.
This might be over a period of time, Gloria?
Typically it is, and sometimes it's a period of years before any actual sexual contact happens. And that's the interesting part because, you know, you have to, as a perpetrator, you're being very patient and you're being very careful not to be caught. And sometimes it takes a long length of time to really get a child in particular to trust you to the point where they're going to trust that whatever you do and whatever you say to them is something that is going to be good and healthy for them. And so sometimes it takes a while for the teachings that parents and guardians have, you know, have taught to these children to undo those or do them in private to start talking about those kind of things in private. And so a perpetrator might even, you know, do something or say something and say, now, do you trust that I'm doing the right thing for you? And try to even, you know, come up with that divide between right and wrong and actually turn the child against their guardian or their parent as they're the ones that are not normal or they're wrong.
Many times when we're trying to analyze this, try to understand, you know, we always ask the question why when we hear about these cases. We forget, I say we, society, me, a lot of people, we forget that there's a social context that surrounds sexual violence. There are social norms that in some cases make it more common or make it easier for a perpetrator to rationalize, I guess. For one thing, we live in a pretty violent society these days. There's violence. Turn on any TV newscast, there's violence all over the place. There's a traditional view of masculinity that is a social norm that kind of factors into at least some of these cases, not all of them, obviously.
Some of the cases, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think that when parents, when they don't monitor video games and the TV shows that they're watching, then they're setting these children up for accepting that violence is the norm, and that is okay. And so parents really have a challenge today in today's world of making sure that their children are not watching materials and participating in activities where any kind of violence is condoned. And that's, again, that's a huge challenge. I mean, even school teachers are experienced just physical violence in the classroom, and I think that is that's directly related to the videos and the movies and the TV programs that we're seeing today.
We had this in the past. I mean, when I was a kid, I don't know, what was on television, Hopalong Cassidy, Roy Rogers. But, you know,
I remember those.
We had westerns, we had shoot 'em ups, but they, if you look at them today, I mean, they seem almost ridiculously harmless. I'll tell you what scares me, and I'm not a video gamer. That's not something that I'm into or do. I know there are a lot of people, kids and teens and young adults, who do it like crazy today. Some of these commercials for some of these video games are shockingly violent. I mean, shockingly. They don't just kill people. Mm-hmm. They blow them to smithereens. They burn them. And I've seen a lot of these on sports shows. Well, you know, this comes on. And the first couple of times I saw mm-hmm. them, I thought they were like, you know, R-rated movies or something. And then you find out it's a game. You know, at the end, the Xbox or PlayStation, whatever they are, pops up and says, oh, my gosh, that's a video game.
And I think, excuse me, over the years, I think that transition has happened slowly. And yet we are at the point where we're starting to recognize that perhaps we need to change some of what the viewing audience is actually seeing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a little bit about a little bit of an overview of sexual violence. We'll return to this here and there. We do want to say straight away, too, we'll mention this a few times. Gosh, if you have any concerns about anything that we talk about today, or you have concerns about something we don't talk about, voice is there. To help you, VOICE is an acronym. It stands for Victim Outreach Intervention Center. Pretty easy to remember, VOICE, here in Butler. And you can call them anytime with questions, concerns, whatever. Right, Gloria?
Right. And if I could just advertise the phone number, it's 1-800-400-8551 is our 24-hour hotline. There's always somebody to talk to if you have questions. There's the Butler office as well. If you want to call during the daytime and talk to me, that's 724-283-8700. Or you can visit our website at voiceforvictims.com and get a lot of information from the website as well.
We'll give those numbers and address again. I just wanted to mention that before we got any deeper so that
I appreciate that.
If anybody has to leave us for one reason mm-hmm. or another, know that VOICE is there here locally. Online at voiceforvictims.com or that 24-hour hotline. Toll-free is 24 hours, 1-800-400-8551.
And if I could just interject, Dave, that mm-hmm. the services are free and they're confidential. So if there's a teenage boy out there that's been sexually assaulted and feels like he needs to talk privately to somebody, he can call in and he doesn't even have to give his name. We're going to give him information and resources so that he can take the next step that he needs to take.
Now, we're going to talk about sexual assault for a number of different age groups. We're going to break it down a little bit. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and that's why we're talking about this today with a person who knows a lot about it. She's a medical advocate specialist for VOICE, Gloria Armstrong. Let's talk about kids, first of all, children. We mentioned some statistics earlier. Let's go over those. Parents, more than a third of the time, are the perpetrators of sexual assault against children. It's like 37%. It's a parent?
It's a parent, yes. And then in addition to that, the next highest group is other family members or caregivers, and then parents, partners, or paramours. 23% of the time are the perpetrators.
So another family member could be an uncle, a brother, or something like that, whatever.
It could be, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And parents' partners would be could be a stepfather or just a partner, mm-hmm. a life partner of...
Right. Of girlfriend, boyfriend.
Exactly.
However they identify, correct.
Wow. Those are high percentages.
Yeah. So you see that most of the abuse is perpetrated in the home. Mm. And that is one of the reasons why it's so difficult for people to step outside of the boundaries of their home and tell somebody what's been happening. And in particular, children, because children don't have, number one, they don't have the mental and emotional capability that an adult does, and so they are not able to feel confident enough within themselves to start talking about something that they instinctively know is very private and should be kept private. And so they're conflicted. They grow up with this conflicted feeling of, I think something's really wrong here, but I'm too afraid to talk about it, because an abuser will tell them that if they talk about it, then they're going to be hurt physically, or they're going to take away some of the rewards that they've been getting, you know, when they're being groomed, or that they're going to hurt their family members. Mm-hmm. And so they easily take on the responsibility for their own mistreatment when you think about it that way.
So what then, Gloria, is a conscientious parent to do? Be on guard for any sorts of change in behavior?
Yes, that's primarily, I'd say, the most important thing to be watching for. If you have a child who is outgoing and pleasant, typically gets reasonably good grades in school, has been active perhaps in the arts or sports, and you see that start to taper off or even go downhill quickly, some kind of trauma has happened in that child's life, and that's a given. Trying to find out what kind of trauma that is can be quite a challenge. I think when a parent, remember that talking about anything sexual to your parents, no matter what age, is very, very uncomfortable for most children.
True, yeah.
And for parents. I mean, it's you know, on both ends there, it can be very uncomfortable. And so how do you cross that bridge of saying, you know, I've noticed, we're going to call her Susie. Susie, I noticed that, you know, in the last 3 months that your grades are starting to slip and I'm really concerned. Watch and see what reaction you get. If she shifts her body away from you, if she folds her arms, if she becomes defensive, if she just looks down at the floor and says nothing, that silence is an indication that something really has happened. Sometimes it's a process, just like it is for the perpetrator to get somebody to feel comfortable enough to start talking about the bad things that are happening, especially within the home. And so remember that it takes sometimes years for a perpetrator to get that child to kind of disbelieve what the parents and guardians are teaching them about right and wrong. Well, you have to build that bridge of safety to safety for the child, and letting them know that whatever they have to say, that you're not going to punish them, that if they need help, that you're going to get help, you're going to know where to get help, because we're talking about where to get help today, that you're going to know the signs of abuse. And, you know, I'm not going to get real technical, you know, for today's purposes, but any kind of physical changes, you know, and early sexual hormonal physical changes can be another indication that there's been mm-hmm. sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And that's not a common known fact.
You mean an early onset of puberty?
Absolutely.
That can be a sign or a symptom that this child's been abused?
Yes. I mean, I knew a five-year-old one time that virtually looked like she was 13 in her development.
Wow.
And we traced it back, and sure enough, there was very early on she had been molested by her stepdad.
Now, if it's a, well, there's hypothetical, a stepfather, mm-hmm. someone in the immediate family, okay, that's one, very sad, but that's one situation. What about if it's a someone outside the family, but, and I'll use the term you did, a groomer, a parent would have to be on guard for that to, you know, mm-hmm. see that there's something unusual here, there's something goofy mm-hmm. here, whether it's gifts that are being, you know, bestowed upon a child mm-hmm. by an outsider or something like that. Be on the lookout for that.
You know, Dave, when I raised my children, I remember that if my kids came home and said there was going to be an overnight party, a sleepover, mm-hmm. if I did not know the parent well, that didn't happen. And in today's world, I think we need to be even more cautious than that. It's probably safer to have children to your house, and then you can literally monitor a sleepover the sleepover activities and make sure that the children are doing, you know, healthy activities. I know that being able to contact parents, I mean, for children that are a little bit older, contact those parents day or night saying, you know, if my child wants to come home for any reason, are you willing to let them come home? I need a contact, you know, a phone number. Go into that person's house. Make friends with them. Don't just assume that these are good people just because they appear to be maybe in a school setting. Hmm. You know, you have to do some investigating. You have to be, it's better to err on the side of caution nowadays than it is just to assume that people are what they say they are.
We're talking with Gloria Armstrong about sexual assault. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Something occurred to me just now as we were chatting, and I don't know, maybe it's out in left field. This all seems to be relatively new to us. Certainly it's new that we're talking about it. And as I mentioned as a preface to our conversation here today, this needs to be talked about. This can't be something that's secretive and you know, behind closed doors. We need to, that's why it's Sexual Assault Awareness Month, to raise awareness. But did this happen back in the 1940s, in the 1950s, in the 1960s? Did this happen back then?
You know, I've talked to people that are in their 60s and 70s and 80s that have actually come in and disclosed that they were victims of incest, or you know, that they were raped repeatedly by their father. Mm. It's been happening forever. As long as there has been, you know, people on the face of the earth, I believe it's been happening forever. I think that as we progress as a society, we are more willing to embrace the wrongs and try to make them right. We are doing it through education, and we're doing it through awareness. And I think, you know, I mean, I think it's, there are other agencies, you know, across the United States and even globally that promote equality among the sexes, that promote, you know, healthy relationships. And that's what we're about, is making sure that people understand what healthy relationships are and what the signs of unhealthy relationships look like.
All the more reason that, this is not new. What's relatively new is that we're talking about it, that we're raising awareness about it, that it's not being pushed behind the closet door. We need to take a break. We're going to talk about other, as I said, we're going to break this down a little bit. Teens, adults, women, minorities, there are different issues for a whole variety of different areas in our society as we discuss sexual assault awareness. Our guest is Gloria Armstrong. We'll pick up our conversation with Gloria here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back. We're talking about sexual assault awareness here in the month of April. It's important that we talk about it. You, listeners, can be involved as well to help spread awareness, to help do your part in ending sexual violence. I'm looking at a poster here that shows a woman wearing jeans. What the heck is that going to do to raise awareness, Gloria? This is a special day you've got coming up here.
Actually, the Awareness Day is on April 27th. Mm-hmm. We are asking agencies, individuals, anybody that is willing to wear jeans on that day. And the reason that day is so important is that there was actually a case in Italy where a woman, the perpetrator was convicted of rape, and the judge overturned the findings and said that her jeans were skin tight, therefore she had to have consented to sex. And it was so absurd, the details of the case were so absurd that it couldn't possibly have been that. And so that was what initiated Denim Day, because she was wearing denim. And yes, they were skinny jeans, just, you know, like a lot of us wear these days. But there are many ways you can get a pair of jeans off of somebody if you intend to assault them.
So, Denim Day, that's a Wednesday, but it's the last Wednesday in April.
It is. Please join us.
27th. Wear jeans, and if people ask you why you're wearing jeans, say, how can you spread the word about the sexual assault awareness here locally? And by the way, don't think this is something that only happens somewhere else. It happens in Butler County. It's all over.
It happens globally.
I want to do one thing before we start talking about a little bit about teens. Because we spend some time talking about kids being victims of sexual assault. There is a child line, right? This is a different telephone number to, I don't know, what, report suspected child sexual
yes.
abuse?
It's a state number, or 24-hour 800 number, where you can call even if you suspect child abuse. The two things that are required is that you suspect child abuse and that you can identify or give evidence that will identify the child that you think is being abused. And so that that it's a free number. It's 1-800-932-0313. Now, if I could just mention, too, that there is a mandated reporting law in Pennsylvania, and so professionals that come in contact with children are required by law to report suspected abuse. And any individual has the right and the responsibility to call that line. And I would say, err on the side of caution. If you suspect something and it turns out to be nothing, you've at least been proactive and tried to protect a child that you thought was in danger.
And this is, I don't know whether it's a totally new law, but I know it's been upgraded and tweaked a bit in recent years here in Pennsylvania, this whole mandated reporting concept, right?
It has. In fact, as a voice employee, 24 hours a day, I am now a mandated reporter. So I could be in Walmart and see abuse going on or get a disclosure from somebody, and I am required by law to report any abuse that I suspect to somebody under the age of 18.
Well, let's talk about teens now, a different category than kids, although most teens are still minors up to the age of 18, I guess, in Pennsylvania. But and you can certainly have adult sexual assault perpetrators. It could be family members, could be friends, could be others, just like we were talking about before. But you also have the potential of sexual assault among teens, you know, like in a dating situation. And this could be in pretty young teens these days. Those of you who are baby boomers, kids tend to date a lot earlier than they used to back when you were in high school.
Well, I think you've touched on something. There's, you know, parental monitoring there that, you know, that we have that's responsible for that, I believe, you know, and not knowing where your child is and what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think some of that being implemented can actually reduce that, the likelihood of a kid being, you know, in a situation sexually where they need not to be. Teens in particular are very susceptible to peer pressure. And they like to talk it up. They like to talk about, you know, their sexual activities nowadays where, Dave, I don't believe that, you know, in our day that we were so bold about it. And yet teens seem to be very bold about it. They're bold on social media. They're bold in the locker room. They're bold everywhere and talking about, you know, who's doing what to whom. And that seems to have become the norm. And there are very few people that if they do stand up and say that I don't want to be sexually active, they're actually bullied in this day and age.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, this whole concept of sexting, sending naked pictures of yourself to other people, I realize that it's rather widespread today. And among younger kids, it still somewhat astonishes me. I'm still a little bit agog at it.
It's shocking, and that's another reason for parents to be monitoring cell phones and call history, and you know, putting you know, blocks on their phones and even their computers to make sure that this is not happening. One good rule of thumb, and I'm not going to be a popular parent when I leave here today, But, you know, I know families that refuse to let their teenagers have their phones in their cell phones after they go to bed at night. And I think that's a lot of when that sexting and that activity actually happens. It's in private.
I've read about that where, you know, some parenting counselors have suggested that. For a simple reason, even apart from this that we're talking about today, kids, teens being up half the night chatting, you know, on their phones, not necessarily anything involving what we're talking about here, but just awake too long, you know, and then when they should be asleep. Something that earlier generations didn't have to deal with, quite frankly. So we don't want to be judgmental. Who knows where we would have been if they had cell phones back in those days, smartphones and the capability of pictures. There are those, I'm sure, who say, hey, this is a part of teenage years. You know, take it easy, back off a little bit. I don't think they realize some of the things that goes on.
The sad part is that if you're sexting at an early age, it is so easy to identify where the picture came from and who it was sent to. And once it's placed on the internet, it is there forever. And so you might be in your mid-20s and somebody has done a search online about your history. They may actually be able to retrieve some of those records. And that is not something you want to face when you're trying to get a job later on in life.
Once it's posted online, somebody could retrieve it in Germany. Who knows?
Right.
Once they save it on there.
You don't know what they're doing with it.
You might be applying for a job later in life, and that pops up. I've talked to a lot of human resources people that hire new employees, and it's pretty common these days to do an internet search of a potential new employee. And I have a personal interview, application, yada, 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 and then they do an internet search.
It's very common.
Who knows what turns up. Kind of a subcategory of teens kind of merges into the young adult category, and that's college dating. But it introduces new things to talk about. Number one, increased availability of alcohol because of much less parental oversight, in most cases none. So you have much easier access to alcohol and other things that tend to lower inhibitions, and that's a problem for, especially for a lot of, I suppose, younger college students, freshmen and sophomores, who just aren't quite sure of this whole thing yet. They're still getting their feet wet.
They are, Dave, and I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but freshmen college students, about 16% of them. This is a horrific statistic. Experience some kind of sexual assault in their freshman year. And so there are older classmen, upperclassmen that just wait for the freshmen to come in and take advantage of them and, you know, just feed on their vulnerabilities. And sad but true.
I've talked with schools, representatives of colleges now, who this is standard part of orientation week, where incoming students are information is presented to them about this so that they're not totally in the dark, and that certainly could.
Well, you know, I know it, but SRU, they actually have a women's center there, and they're very proactive in bringing awareness to all students about what's acceptable sexual behavior. Getting consent, what does that mean, and the individual, you know, rights of students to make their yes be a yes and their no be a no, and have it respected. And so they're very proactive locally.
And parents need to make sure that as their kids reach that age, hopefully they've given them enough counseling and training whenever they were growing up that they're able to make responsible decisions about this now and decide where they want to go in terms of sexual activity, and hopefully that they can make good judgments. But all you can do.
That's our hope.
Yeah.
We have to keep talking about it, Dave.
Let's talk about women as a special category of sexual assault awareness. I don't know. I don't have any of these statistics that you do, Gloria, but women must certainly be the majority of the victims in sexual assault, eh?
That is true. However, men are victims too. Mm-hmm. And I think there are more male victims out there than we are ever going to know about, because men typically feel as though they should have been able to fight off their, you know, their attacker, that they will be just tormented emotionally if they, you know, if they say that somebody overpowered them. And so they keep it very private, and the effects of that can affect their mental health and their physical health years down the road.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hear you on that, and I know that there are certainly cases that appear in the news. I think the first few times we heard stories female teachers who were involved in a sexual situation with a male student, perhaps many of us were somewhat incredulous, and it's not something we see every day, thank goodness, but it's fairly common these days. I mean, it's not, your mouth doesn't drop open anymore when you hear about this.
I know, and I think that there was a misconception that women can't be the perpetrators. Mm-hmm. And they absolutely can be the perpetrators. And you think about a situation where there's a young male student and a female teacher. She's fully taking advantage of the developmental stage that young male student is in, emotionally and psychologically and mentally. And so it is always the responsibility of the adult to not initiate any sexual kind of contact. It's a crime if they do, mm-hmm. for anybody under 18.
What about, and this is something, some of the background material that you shared with me, and I guess I never thought about some of this stuff. Sexual assault against women could include, and this apparently happens, birth control sabotage.
Yeah, isn't that an interesting fact? I mean,
caught my eye.
Well, I'm glad that it did, because that's a form of what we call either sexual or reproductive coercion, and that is a topic that I've actively been working on training in doctors' offices that may not be aware of that this actually goes on. And I don't think many women even talk about it, but we're seeing more and more women come into our office, and they say things like, you know, my partner, I think he's been taking some of my birth control pills, and I'm afraid that he wants me to get pregnant, or it seems like the condoms are breaking an awful lot, and I don't understand, because we've switched brands. I don't get it, and you know, pregnancy can be a way to keep somebody close to you, and it also can be a way if that male person in particular doesn't want their partner to be pregnant, they feel like they're losing control over their female partner once they get pregnant. And so it's like two sides of one coin, where they can either, you know, sabotage the birth control method, or they can not support pregnancy once it happens.
So this is back to something we were talking about earlier, where power of oppression comes in, where the hypothetical case we're talking about, a man wants power over the reproductive rights of his partner.
And it's such a private matter that a lot of women don't want to talk about it. And so I think that, you know, being on the radio today and you being so willing to talk about this sensitive topic, hopefully it's going to bring some awareness to some women and some families out there that never thought about, well, this could be going on in my marriage or my relationship. And it's very disrespectful. And it is a form of control. And women typically in these kind of situations, it's been a pattern of control. And so by the time it gets to sexual control, they feel like it's just one more step in the relationship where they feel like they need to submit to this, and many times it's out of fear.
Can this be a prelude to physical harm or fear of physical harm?
Absolutely, and we hear this More times than I can tell you, Dave, somebody will come in and say, I got beaten because I didn't want to have sex with my partner. And that's the harsh reality, that it is happening behind closed doors. And women many times feel very stuck because they cannot get out of the home to start talking about what's going on there. And they're afraid that they're going to be judged because, you know, victims very much believe that they cause their own mistreatment. You think that sounds a little awful? It is very much often. That's the person that is controlling them. They want them to believe that they have full control over them. And so financial resources might be limited to that survivor of this kind of violence. They might be isolated because that's the way that the abuser wants them to be.
They might be afraid they don't have a place to live.
They might feel like they're literally going to be on the street,
yeah,
and that nobody's going to believe what's going on behind closed doors.
We need to take a break. Listeners, we're talking about April as sexual awareness. April is Sexual Awareness Month. With us today is Gloria Armstrong. She's a medical advocate specialist with VOICE. You know what VOICE is, I hope. It stands for Victim Outreach Intervention Center here in Butler. VOICE, and you've heard Gloria mention a number of times, of course, always, you know, confidence is never breached here. But she's mentioned that, you know, I've had people come in, I've had women come in, I've had girls come in. You can talk to people at VOICE. And that's one of the things that they're there for, is to give people somebody to talk to if they're facing any sort of a situation like this. And as we go to break, I want to give you the contact number again. There's a free 24-hour hotline. You can talk to somebody at VOICE anytime, 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. Doesn't matter. There'll be somebody there. 1-800-400-8551. Toll free, 1-800-400-8551. Or you can get information, contact them online at voiceforvictims.com. Okay, and when we come back, a little bit more about our discussion today with Gloria here on It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back right after these words.
Trader Horn, my favorite store.
10, 20, 30, now 40% off everything in the stores. Trader Horn stores. It's getting down there closer and closer. The giant liquidation sale at all Trader Horn stores is now 40% off. What are you waiting for? Get to your favorite Trader Horn store today and take advantage of the 40% off everything. Lawn and garden, hardware, plumbing, electrical, home decor, even Bellevue products. Now 40% off at Trader Horn, your favorite store.
Ponderosa Steakhouse. A whole lot more than just steaks. They have chicken, seafood, wings, fried chicken, and of course the all-you-can-eat buffet, and also the senior special. Ponderosa's senior special, Thursdays, just $6.59 for lunch until 4 p.m. and just $7.59 until 9 p.m. Beverage included with both prices. Ponderosa Steakhouse and Thursdays for the senior special. Ponderosa Steakhouse, Clearview Circle, right here in Butler.
Welcome back, listeners. We're chatting today with Gloria Armstrong. Gloria is a medical advocate specialist with VOICE, Victim Outreach Intervention Center. We're talking about April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Some sensitive things we're talking about here, folks. I'm sure you understand that, and I do hope you understand. We're not talking about this in any sort of a titillating manner. This is serious business here. This needs to be discussed openly. You mentioned, Gloria, earlier that you feel the number of men who have been sexually assaulted is probably far greater than has ever been reported, because many men would be hesitant to report this. They would feel somehow that they should have been able to do more or something to fend off a perpetrator. I would say to you that I bet there's a lot of women who also fail to report this or fail to talk to anybody about sexual assault out of some sense of embarrassment, maybe a sense of shame. Shouldn't be any sense of shame, but embarrassment for themselves, for their family, but all sorts of reasons why they might keep quiet, might never say anything.
We touched on a few of those. I think that shame and fear of the perpetrator finding out that they are starting to talk about what's been going on.
Uh-huh.
And the consequences could be very severe for them, even death, because some perpetrators will not under any circumstances accept that the secret's going to get out and it could be made public.
So not just embarrassment or shame, fear.
Fear, absolute fear.
Huh. Let's talk a little bit about the lesbian, gay, bisexual community, transgender community. Are there special issues with regard to these individuals, Gloria, in terms of sexual assault?
What's really sad is that this population seems to have a much higher rate of assault than any other population.
Really? Well, you have some surprising statistics that you share with us here. Wow.
Well, you know, when you think about how the LGBTQ community it has been promoting and being, you know, very bold and very public about their lifestyles, there still is a lot of non-acceptance about their lifestyles. And there are still hate crimes that happen because somebody is bold enough to say, you know, that I'm bisexual or, you know, that I'm transgender. And, you know, assault is never right, no matter what your beliefs are and what your sexual orientation or how you identify. It's never right. It's a crime. And so the real issue is here just respecting people for who they are and not resorting to violence. And anybody that is different, you know, even on the playground when we were growing up, Dave, that if somebody was different, they got picked on.
Yeah.
And so although, you know, these people in this population, I think, are becoming more accepted in our society, there's still many people that don't accept them and will resort to violence, even killing them to silence them.
Bullying and people got picked on whenever we were that age, and that was before the era of social media. I can only imagine what that factor has added into this whole equation.
Exponentially, it's like everybody knows everybody's business.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're promoting that you're different, you're going to be criticized, you're going to be maybe even assaulted, and certainly your reputation could be damaged.
You may be mocked by
yes.
by other classmates, whatever, who knows, other
right.
people. Gay women, gay men. Yeah, I guess the more I think about it, they are vulnerable to being assaulted.
Yeah. They are, and I think for those that have not really come public with, you know, their lifestyle.
That's what I was thinking about. If they've, you know, if their family doesn't know that they're gay, I'm trying to think of a hypothetical example. Their family doesn't know that they're gay, and they're assaulted by. A same-sex person, let's say. My goodness, how do you... You've got a whole other set of circumstances to deal with if you're going to tell somebody about this.
You do, and a lot of people in this population really don't want their family members to ever know what their lifestyle is. And they fear losing the relationships that they do have, and they could be excommunicated, they could be disowned, and they have a lot to lose by... not being public with the lifestyle that they lead, and so it should be their choice whether or not they do that.
And so perpetrators know this; they know they're less likely to tell, and so they become more vulnerable.
More vulnerable.
Wow.
Yes.
I hadn't thought about it. I hadn't thought it through. Mm-hmm. I guess until chatting with you about this. So we have sexual assault victims. We know that for sure, of all ages now. This is not just an isolated instance. Not since it happens and then you forget about it. For one thing, in many cases, it's continued over many, many years. But even if it's one or two incidents, there are reactions that may continue for the rest of a person's life.
Right. And those kind of symptoms can lead to, or that kind of trauma can lead to sleeping disorders, eating disorders, actually becoming very risky sexually with their behaviors, emotional and psychological disorders like PTSD, depression, anxiety, low self-esteem. They are at risk for increased suicide, and long-term employment and even long-term relationships become very difficult.
So it's one of the reasons why voice is there, to be able to give individuals someone to talk to.
You know,
actually, can I talk to voice anonymously?
You absolutely can.
Okay.
We have people that do call in anonymously. I think I've been working there 12 years, and over my 12 years, I think I've had two people that actually remained anonymous. One of the things that we pride ourselves on is building a rapport with the people that call in, making sure that we're not judging them, making sure that they know that we provide counseling. If their case goes to court, we are going to send advocates to go with them. They are never alone in a hospital setting or a court setting if that's what they choose to. To have. Mm-hmm. So we have a wide variety of support services for these kind of victims.
You shared some brochures with me that I was not, well, I was familiar with the Protection from Abuse Order, mm-hmm. Where a victim of assault can seek a protection from abuse order from police. But you shared something else with me that I was not familiar with. Protection from intimidation and sexual violence protection. Are these new things, or am I just out of the loop, or what is this, Gloria?
They are relatively new. Actually, Pennsylvania is the 39th state to put a law into effect for sexual violence and intimidation. So we were following a trend, from other states that have realized that this was that there are victims that are not in relationship that need protection. And so with the sexual violence protection order, mm-hmm. There's no established relationship between the victim and the perpetrator. And the same thing goes for the protection from intimidation.
So it doesn't have to be a boyfriend-girlfriend type thing?
Or? It cannot be, actually, for these laws to actually provide protection.
Because that would be protection from abuse. That would be different.
Yes. Okay. So if there's a relationship, you may apply for a protection from abuse court order. It's a civil court order. All three of them are civil court orders. The police do not have to be involved. And you can call voice on how to, apply for those. You can actually apply for them at domestic relations, and voice advocates will walk you through that process. You can get them up to 3 years. And the protection from intimidation law is really for people that are under 18. A guardian or parent must apply on their behalf. And so, And that's how that works.
Well, protection from abuse, commonly known as a PFA, you hear that a lot.
Right.
I was familiar with that. I wasn't familiar with the other ones. And did you mention that for any of these, including a PFA, you don't necessarily have to have police involved? You can get this through.
It's a civil court order. It's a protection order that if you apply for it and it's granted, if the perpetrator violates it, then it is possible that criminal charges can result mm-hmm. from that kind of activity. Mm-hmm. Voice works very closely with the police and with the district attorney's office in making sure that victims understand that and help them if they need to go to that next level.
So if people wanted more information about any of these, protection from abuse order, protection from intimidation, sexual violence protection, could they call Voice and get more information on how to proceed, how to start proceedings on these things?
We will explain it all to you. Please call if you have questions.
And you can get in touch with Voice toll-free, 24 hours, any day, 1-800-400-8551, or it's a website, too. You can get contact information, voiceforvictims.com. What's the statute of limitations for sex abuse crimes, sexual assault crimes here in Pennsylvania? Actually, it's a simple question with an extremely complex answer, right? It depends on the degree of the crime. It depends on the charge. Depends on a lot of stuff. But can we generalize at all in terms of a statute of limitations?
Well, for the purposes of today's show, we're going to generalize it. In Pennsylvania, victims of sexual assault over the age of 18 have 12 years to report. So if you're 18 and over, so that they're going to be 30.
Age 30.
Up to age 30. Victims that are under the age of 18, and this is the confusing part, that were born before August 27, 2002, have 12 years after their 18th birthday to file criminal charges. And the reverse is victims under the age of 18 who were born after August 27th, 2002, have 32 years after their 18th birthday to file criminal charges. And that would be age 50.
Age 50, okay. Yeah. Well, it seems like the lawmakers could have made it a lot simpler. Over 18, have until the age of 30. Under 18, mm-hmm. have until the age of 50. There are some who argue that there shouldn't be any statute of limitations. No, there are circumstances where, you know, if a perpetrator has been dead for 20 years, obviously, if witnesses aren't around anymore, whatever. There are circumstances where it would be impossible to prosecute. But some have suggested that, why do we have a statute of limitations at all on, some of these crimes are pretty disgusting.
They really are. And if you're one of those people that feel like this is not stringent enough, it is a good opportunity for you to advocate with your legislatures and let them know how you feel, what your thinking is on it.
Mm-hmm. There are some moves toward this, Every once in a while you hear it in the news that there are bills being introduced or it's in a subcommittee somewhere, mm-hmm. Where they're talking about this. There's another thing I wanted to mention because I didn't realize it until I was going through some of the background information that Gloria supplied me with in advance of our conversation today. And that is, I'm searching for it here, it has to do with the statutory rape. Because if someone would have asked me, what's that? I was under the impression that, to give a simple answer, it was an adult who was sexually assaulting a minor. Okay. It turns out that there's a four-year age difference. I didn't realize this at all. So someone that's 17, for example, could be charged with statutory rape if the sexual assault victim was 13.
Parents hear that and hear that clearly, that David said that accurately. Are there many cases that are moving in that direction? Not many, but it has happened. And so it is critical that you are educating your children, your teenage children, about the laws. And I'm going to take a minute here, if we have that minute, Dave,
go ahead. Sure.
This really has to deal with consent. In Pennsylvania, sexual intercourse with somebody under the age of 16 when another person is 4 or more years older is called statutory sexual assault. For example, a 13-year-old has sex with a 17-year-old. Or, and you see that four-year mm-hmm. window right there, mm-hmm. or a 15-year-old has sex with a 19-year-old. That 13-year-old cannot give consent because there's a four-year difference in the age there. And that 17-year-old, male or female, can be charged with sexual assault. And statutory is going to be, up to the district attorney's office to determine the details of that case. Just please understand that anybody under the age of 13 cannot, under any circumstances, give consent to have sex. It's against the law.
And once you're over the age of 18, then you're no longer a minor, right? So,
right.
Victim or perpetrator.
Well, and actually, 16 and above, you can actually give consent if you're not under the influence of drugs or alcohol, and you clearly have defined your yes as a yes.
Well, I didn't realize that it was a little bit more complex than I had first thought. For example, that a 17-year-old could be charged with the statutory rape if the victim is 4 years younger, 13. And if you don't think that that happens in this day and age, then you're not up to date on what's happening around the area these days.
I actually know of a 17-year-old male that is now on the Megan's list and classified as a sexually violent predator for the rest of his life.
Wow. Listeners, our time is gone to chat with Gloria this time. She'll be back with us, and we're going to be exploring various topics various services that Voice provides to our community. And Gloria will be back with us probably sometime next month for another discussion. Gloria Armstrong is a medical advocate specialist for VOICE, that's Victim Outreach Intervention Center. Again, their 24-hour toll-free hotline, 1-800-400-8551, or you can get them online at voiceforvictims.com. Gloria, thanks for being here today. It's a good conversation that we had. It's an important conversation that we had today.
It was a good conversation and a very important one, and I give you kudos, Dave, for being willing to address this publicly.
More to come on It's Your Turn. We'll take a break. Rue Snyder is going to join us, Butler native, singer-songwriter. He's going to be back in town for a concert this weekend. We'll chat with him coming up here on WISR right after these words.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem, the bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
A last-minute snap decision many times is the wrong decision. It's an old adage that planning ahead gives us time to thoroughly consider the issues and will lead us to making the right decision. When we plan ahead long before the inevitable funeral, we'll avoid having to make so many necessary decisions at a time of grief and extreme stress. So now might be the right time to plan ahead. Here are some of the questions you might have. What kind of casket? Burial or cremation? Family photos? Flowers? What kind? The minister, priest, or rabbi? Visitations? The church service or at the funeral home? So many more decisions to make. Now might be the right time to pre-plan at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler. They'll help you make all the arrangements now while you can think clearly. Talk over pre-planning with Thompson Miller Funeral Home at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Call 724-287-3706. 287-3706. Pre-arrangement. It makes sense. Thompson Miller. Time-honored excellence.
Welcome back, listeners. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. Certainly good conversation with Gloria Armstrong. Coming up on tomorrow's program, by the way, we'll have open talk. Also, we'll be chatting tomorrow about diabetes with Dr. Michael Mosley. And we'll have guests tomorrow from the Musical Theater Guild's upcoming spring show, which is the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. So we'll talk about that. That's coming up soon. They'll be with us tomorrow. Our next guest joins us by telephone. He is singer-songwriter Rue Snyder. He's a Butler native on the road right now, but he's going to be in Butler this weekend for a concert. Rue, how you doing? Nice to talk to you again.
I'm doing great. It's good to talk to you again.
Where are you? The last time I talked to you when we were setting up our interview, I think you were in Austin or Arizona or somewhere.
Yeah. I'm in St. Louis right now. I play in St. Louis tonight. I was in Indianapolis last night. I'm in Columbus on, I'm not sure what day it is, 2 days from now I'm in Columbus.
But you'll be in Butler this Saturday night for a concert
at
the Butler Little Theater, right?
Yes, I'm so excited to play at the Butler Little Theater. They've been really great to me. Sue Collar, who I've known my whole life, has been really, really supportive, and I'm so excited to be playing there with Whitney Ann Jenkins. Yeah, we're going to do a split show Saturday night. It's going to be awesome.
Tickets are available at Mays, I know, also tickets at Snack and Pack.
They're at Snack and Pack. They're at Mays Music. They're at Dr. Dan McCarty's office. He's an amazing Butler chiropractor. Inner Beauty Hair Design on Cunningham Street and at Pets in the Park at Moraine Point. All those folks have been really supportive. I mean, a lot of those people have known my folks because I'm from Butler, but all those businesses have been super supportive, and I'm grateful to them for, having tickets for us.
Tickets are $10. Now, when I talked with you, and you were in Texas, you were at a music festival. Southwest Music Festival. South by Southwest, I'm sorry. Now, when you're on the road, is it always a festival, or are you playing some just single-night gigs as you travel around?
Oh, no, it's mostly just me, like, playing in bars, you know what I mean, with, like, somebody local or, like, another touring act. That's most of the time what it is. I went to this thing called Folk Alliance in Kansas City. It's a big conference with 2,000 people from the industry and folk, you know, people playing acoustic music. And then I went to South by Southwest, which is, like, a big rock and roll festival, music from all over, people who are on the road playing every spot where you could fit a musician in Austin, Texas, become the venue. It's cool. But mostly I'm just out on the road playing in towns like Butler all over the country, you know, building a fan base one person at a time.
Austin has become quite a hotbed, has it not? I mean, there's a program on PBS, been on for a long, long time, Austin City Limits.
Yeah, that's like a goal, right? Play Austin City Limits. That's an amazing thing. When I was at South by Southwest, Iggy Pop was doing his Austin City Limits taping. That guy has become this sort of like sensation after coming out of the 70s and doing punk rock for so long. I guess he just put out an awesome record. People aspire to play that. You know, Austin City Limits, it's a thing. That's in my sights. It's in my crosshairs, you know?
Tell us a little
bit. Right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right now what I'm trying to do is every day I've been sending tweets to the Bernie Sanders campaign because I really want to play at one of his rallies. I have a song about income inequality, and I'm like, why can't I play at a Bernie Sanders rally? I think I should be able to. So I just keep tweeting him every day thinking, like, I think the Pennsylvania primary is April 26th, and I'm going to be in Pennsylvania. So I think it would be cool to play for a presidential candidate.
You are a Butler native, Rue Snyder. Did you go to Butler High School?
I did.
Did you know at that age that music was in your future and might be a career, or was this something that developed later?
Probably, yeah. You know, you spend a lot of time in fear, right? Like running away from the things that you want the most. But I always wanted to play music, and I've been doing it really seriously since 2012. It took a while to, you know, we get caught up in a lot of things that hold us back because we are taught to believe by the world that you can't accomplish you can't have a life that's fulfilling and happy and doing what you want. And you know what I mean? Like, so it took me a while to realize, like, oh, I can do what I want. I'm just going to go after it. So that's what I've been doing. Mm-hmm.
It's tough to, I'm not tried it myself. I'm not a musician, nor trained in that area, but I've talked to people who say, it's tough to make a career in the arts, you know, whether you're a painter or a cello player or a singer-songwriter. It's a tough road to hoe. Have you found that out on the road?
Yeah. It's like the hardest thing I've ever done, right? I mean, it's super difficult to create an audience, and with the music industry being sort of, I'm not sure what's going on there. It's the hardest thing I've ever done. But I find that it's difficult for everyone, and I find that anybody that identifies what they want to do and attempts to go after it encounters obstacles. But it's the most fulfilling thing to discover your dreams and to relentlessly pursue them with, like, ambition that will not stop. You know what I mean? Whether that's being, like, an accountant or whether it's being a musician on the road. I mean, once you identify what it is that you love in life and go after it, it's a pretty awesome thing. Even as you discover that the journey is more, it's more about the journey than it is, like, kind of the end result, because, like, I'm not sure where anything actually leads, right? But it's pretty awesome, even though it's difficult. The difficulty, I think, is secondary to the satisfaction of doing what you want to do with your life.
You were talking about acoustic music a little bit earlier, Rue. It happens to be in a couple of different sub-genres, I guess, within acoustic, but it happens to be my favorite kind of music. Is what I usually listen to when I want to relax, acoustic music. Is it just you and a guitar when you're on stage performing?
Yeah, with me, I have a Blues Junior amplifier, and I plug my acoustic guitar in. We've got some effects, so it sounds kind of cool. I try to position myself more as like a solo rock guy than just like a singer-songwriter. It's a little more, that's just kind of my preference, but it's me and an acoustic guitar. I do part of the set with an electric guitar, but it's just me. It's a really entertaining, pretty dynamic show, you know. It's like very word-driven, very melodic. People are receptive to it all over the country. So it's been great for me, like, discovering that my audience is, like, very broad and, like, very dynamic in their sort of points of view, and that we come together like about songs and about like matters of the heart and things like this. It's exciting. Even though I play in places where when I talk to people, we think very differently, but we're able to like agree. Music is such a pulls people together in such an interesting way, you know.
Talking with Rue Snyder, singer songwriter. He's going to be in Butler this weekend, his hometown, for a concert. Have you played here before? Have you played before the home folks on occasion?
Oh yeah, I've done two or three house concerts in Butler. I played at the Butler Little Theater, I think, in 2013 when I was just sort of like starting to tour. This is a bigger thing, playing with Whitney Ann Jenkins. She is from West Virginia originally, and she lives in Butler right now. It's exciting to get to share the evening with her, and it's kind of a bigger production. We're going to do, you know, it's a whole evening of music, and I'm just really excited to be a part of that. Hopefully we get a bunch of folks out. I have been doing this for a while, and I have a lot of friends in Butler and a lot of people I know from growing up, but I haven't been in front of a lot of them, you know, with the guitar and with the songs, and I'm excited to hopefully get pack that room, you know what I mean, and tell some stories and have a good time.
I know that, I knew that Whitney was a singer. I've seen her on stage in plays. Have you met her? Have you performed together? Did you know what kind of music she plays?
Yeah, I mean, she does, it's different from mine, but it's like same genre, you know what I mean? She's like a singer-songwriter. She plays with a band sometimes. I think it's like a part of her band is going to be at the Butler Little Theater. It's more of an acoustic evening. But yeah, she's great. It's going to be really fun.
We're talking with Rue Snyder. Where do you get the inspiration for your songs, and how long have you been writing songs apart from performing them?
I've been writing songs for a really long time, like, you know, I don't know, 20 years probably. But like most of those songs were really bad. You know what I mean? It takes a while to like figure out the craft of the whole thing. I started writing songs as a way to sort of keep myself alive, you know, because life can be very difficult sometimes, and I needed an outlet, and songs were a way for me to like keep myself going when it got really dark. As time has progressed, I've learned to just write songs about anything. I mean, I can write a song about anything. And it's just, you develop the craft over a certain amount of time. And you eventually figure out, like, what you want to communicate and what kinds of things connect with folks and what kind of things you're excited to, like, go on the road and sing about for a year, you know? And as I'm out here, I've been, like, experiencing a lot of, like, different lifestyles and seeing people in different ways that I'm not familiar with because I spend most of my time over the last decade in New York City. So that's been inspiring me to write a lot of different kinds of songs just about income inequality and about the way that, like, poor people are treated and minorities and women in America and the things that are going on that we don't always talk about. I'm trying to put together some songs that that address some of those things. I have a song about domestic violence, because I have a lot of female friends who are getting beat up by men. And when you write really personal songs about yourself, people tend to tell you personal things about themselves more than you expect. And sometimes I feel very powerless and don't know how to respond, you know, when people like kind of come to me with information that I'm not expecting to get from them. So I started trying to put their stories into songs, and little by little trying to speak about things that are maybe bigger than myself, because it seems to resonate with people. But the majority of my songs are just kind of me singing about my broken heart, you know what I mean? And everyone can relate to that on some level. And hopefully a little bit of sadness and a little bit of darkness can kind of lift people up so they can come to the concert and hear my things and then maybe leave and not have to deal with it as much. You know what I mean?
This has been the subject of a lot of songs by singer-songwriters over the years. Right now, Taylor Swift is one of the biggest things going in the music business, and
sure,
she tends to be extremely personally revealing. In fact, I understand, I didn't watch it, but one of the recent award shows, of which there seem to be a gazillion these days,
yeah,
she apparently, I don't know, she apparently reveals her new boyfriend in a song or something like that every
that's
so
funny.
Often. I don't know. That's pretty personal. I don't know whether people care that, but maybe they do with her. I don't know.
you know, it's really weird creating things and sharing them with people. For me, it was like Woody Allen was really inspirational to me as an artist, like him as an artist. Like, people have opinions about him as a person, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, like, growing up in a town like Butler, very far away from New York, you know what I mean? Very far away. Like, I didn't grow up Jewish. But watching Woody Allen's films and how specific they were to his experience caused me to really relate to them, even though his experience was so different from my experience, you know? So what I took from that is I try to write songs that are, like, really honest and really real and things that, like, make sense to me and get as specific as possible, as I think you're talking about Taylor Swift doing, because sometimes people can really connect with that, like, emotional honesty, even though the specifics might not relate to them at all. And they can tell when you're, like, telling the truth, you know what I mean? And, like, that means something to them. So that's what I try to do as much as I can.
Never thought about the connection. I'm a Woody Allen movie fan as well, but I never thought about the connection from his craft to songwriting. I can see it right away. I mean, he's been talking about his life and his lifestyle and you know, way back to Annie Hall. He's still doing it. Movies that he's
for
making.
Sure.
Making, I don't know.
I mean, he's been making a movie every year for, like, over 40 years, and that's such an inspiration to me that someone will put one foot in front of the other and just keep making things and never look back. I mean, one of my favorite films of his is Manhattan, and I watched a long documentary about him, and he was really critical about that movie and wasn't even happy with the way it came out. You know what I mean? And it meant so much to so many people. But he's constantly just moving forward in his creative career, and I've taken that as a pattern. Like, I'm just trying to, like, always be moving forward and, like, never looking back and, like, never stopping. You know what I mean? Like, life is so short, and if we don't have, like, ambition, what do we have? You know, you have to identify what it is that you care about and just, like, not let go. And then eventually you die, and everything's okay.
Woody Allen. Was it Midnight in Paris? I got the right title right of his.
Well,
it was
great.
His homage to so many of the great writers who stayed in Paris.
So great.
At some point in
there. I love that movie.
Yeah, that was fabulous. I agree. We're chatting with Rue Snyder, a Butler native, singer, songwriter, holding a CD in my hand here, Rue, the title of which is Leaving to Returning. There's a picture of you against the New York City skyline, so I'm guessing that most of the tunes on this on your CD are refer to the time when you were living in New York.
Oh yeah, I wrote most of those songs. I think I wrote all those songs in New York, and I was living in New York at the time. Yeah.
So when I think of New York City and singer-songwriters, I think of Gertie's Folk City and that area of. Sure. New York, is that scene still there?
It's a different scene now, you know, like everyone's, you know, Randy Burns? Randy Burns is a guy that's still around. He's like coming to places. He used to play with Dylan and all those guys back in the day, like in the Village, you know,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a lot of younger guys coming up, a lot of younger women who are just wonderful. There's a scene called Big City Folk in New York, and people get together and play songs, and it's pretty cool.
Is it still in the area that I knew, you know, Bleecker Street and McDougal? Is that still a hotbed for a singer-songwriter?
Not as much. I mean, there used to be a place called the Path Cafe right there that we used to all go to, and it's closed down. I mean, the rents in New York City are egregious, you know, and small businesses are getting pushed out all the time. The city is sort of designed to, like, destroy people's dreams. And actually, that's a funny plug. I have a record coming out in October, and one of the lines in it is, the city will try to steal your dream, don't let it. But a lot of businesses and a lot of places that a lot of us used to play have gone by the wayside because they can't afford $20,000 a month for rent or whatever, you know?
Mm. Well, that's the case in other areas, too. Carole King and James Taylor a couple of years ago farewell tour, played Pittsburgh, as a matter of fact, one of their last stops. But there is a DVD which was made, and I think what they did was they recorded snippets from their various cities they stopped at during this tour. But yeah, one of the stops, and it's marvelous, and it's an extra in the DVD, is when the two of them, Carole King and James Taylor, go back to the Troubadour in Los Angeles, now closed, where they played whenever they were young singer-songwriters. And actually took the cameras inside. It's the classic scene, like, you know, it's 2:30 a.m. in the nightclub. They've got the chairs upside down on top of the tables in the Troubadour. But, hey, things change, and they've changed in New York City. Yeah. We need to take a break. Rue is going to be with us for a few more minutes here on the program, but we have to take a break right now and check the midday lottery numbers. So, Rue, stick with us. I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
You.
I want to talk a little bit more about your work and your future work. One of our sponsors on the program today, Butler County Ford, Main and Wayne in downtown Butler for nearly 100 years. Really, they've been there since 1918. 98 years. Yeah. Listen, folks, when you've been in business for almost 100 years, you've earned the right to brag a little bit, right? And Butler County Ford is going to do just that. Their customers brag about them, too. They have many, many repeat customers who keep going back because they're easy to work with. They give a nice buck on a trade. The service after the sale is great. Plus, there's a pretty good chance the sales guy who helped you last time is still going to be there to help you again. And that's what they do. That's the philosophy at Butler County Ford. They're not just trying to sell you something. They help people buy their new ride. And it's never been easier. Check online, butlercountyford.com. You can look for specific inventory. You can, and it doesn't matter whether it's a new or used car, truck, or SUV. You can search for a specific inventory that's on hand. You can review model research. You can learn all about financing. They'll also let you know if they have any super hot specials. And on the Butler County Ford website, you can watch informational banner ads as they scroll the screen. Or check out the latest TV commercial. And if you're ready for a test drive, hope you are, they've got a $25 gift card to Texas Roadhouse for doing just that. Butler County Ford since 1918 at your Ford corner, Main and Wayne in downtown Butler. They make your buying experience real easy.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 3131. The pick 3 is 009. The pick 4, 6732. The pick 5, 56427. And the treasure hunt, 3, 6, 8, 18, and 21. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $25,000.
At New Haven Court at Clearview, you don't have to pay a king's ransom to experience the royal touch. With their trial stay program, you can enjoy a respite getaway and experience the assisted living community that brings together a wealth of personalized services, activities, and amenities to create a cozy, home-like, family-friendly atmosphere. Enjoy fine dining, a cozy afternoon in the sunroom, the security of care supervised by an RN, and much, much more. Call 724-477-8701 today.
Welcome back, listeners. We're chatting for a few more minutes with the Butler native singer-songwriter Rue Snyder. He's going to be back in his hometown for a concert this Saturday night at the Butler Little Theater. It's April 16th, 7:30 concert time. Right now, we're chatting with him in St. Louis. He's on tour around the country. The last time, you know, we don't have a lot of that in our immediate area right here in Butler, Rue, but there are other places in the country. I've gone on vacation in New England quite a bit. I love to go up into the White Mountains. And throughout the summer, because they have ski resorts everywhere up there, and they're all open in the summer, even though there's no snow, but they bring singer-songwriters in. And it's great. Yeah. You can go to any of those because, you know, they all have pubs, après-ski stuff, and it's great. And that's one of my favorite things to do when I'm up there in the summertime. What a great way to spend an evening. But, you know, different parts of the country have different things. Is it hard for you to find a city or a stop where you can play? Do you have to book that long in advance, or how does that work?
I spend about 40 to 50 hours a week booking shows. It's the main part of my job. I sit in a coffee shop. I send emails every day, full time. That's how I book tours. So when I'm on the road, I'm spending most of my day in a coffee shop, booking shows. Then I usually go see a movie. Then I go play the gig every day. It's relentless. It's exhausting. It's why everyone doesn't do it who writes songs.
When you're in that business, too, you get used to late nights, right? I mean,
Totally. I quit drinking about a year ago, so it's like I wake up pretty ready to go, but like it's late nights for sure.
You mentioned earlier that you've got another CD coming out. I think you said in the fall. Are you still putting that together? Are you still writing tunes?
Yeah, it's cool. The tunes are pretty much written, although like you never quite know when something's done. You have to let it go. But I started recording it in Jacksonville, Florida. I have a bunch of friends in Jacksonville. It's the biggest town for me outside of Brooklyn. It's been growing piece by piece over the last couple years. I have a bunch of friends there. We worked on parts of the record, 14 songs. And now I have friends around the country who are like adding pieces and sending them to me. You know, you can do this stuff digitally now. I'm going to record some things in Butler when I'm there. And then I'm going to go to New York and spend 5 days finishing it up the first week of May. And then we're going to try to do a bunch of PR, hopefully, and get this thing out in the middle of October. So I'm going to take the month of September off from touring and then start the next tour in October and tour for another year. Never stops, Dave!
Well, the music industry is totally different than it was just a generation ago, where you know, you needed to get a producer, and then you needed to and even this happened to even you know, a group famous like the Supremes or something. You needed to get a record company. You needed to get them to not only to sign a contract, then they had to decide they were going to push you, and get your name out there and get you out in front of the public. And
that would all help. That would help a lot. You know what I mean? Like I'm a one man shop. I have some friends. I have a friend, Amanda Brown, in New York, who's been doing a lot for me. She wears a lot of hats and just has been a very strong advocate, and so has been helping me to get some things done. And I have a friend in Virginia, Christine, who's been doing some booking for me a little bit. But for the most part, I mean, this is pretty much a one-man operation, and it's hard. But I love it.
You mentioned Woody Allen as an influence on you for songwriting ideas and an inspiration for that matter. What about musically? Who did you listen to? Who do you listen to when you want to kick off your boots and relax a little bit? Who's been an inspiration to you musically?
I like anyone that sings with like passion and conviction, from like NWA to the Staple Singers to Slayer, you know, to Hank Williams. Like anyone that's like can like sway me to their point of view for 3 minutes. You know what I mean? What I don't like is anybody that's like bland and doesn't sing with passion. I'm much less concerned about the execution and much more concerned with like heart, you know, like where you're coming from and like, can you make me believe that you're telling me the truth? So I listen to a lot of stuff in the car sometimes, you know, driving for 6 or 7 hours a day. You gotta just like put on some gangster rap and like get from place to place, you know? I listen to everything. Obviously I love like Americana stuff, and most of my friends that I meet on the road play, you know, folky kind of stuff, and I love that. But it's kind of all over the map. I love that Jason Isbell record. I don't know if you've heard him, that guy, and John Moreland from Oklahoma. Those are two of the, I think, best working songwriters in the world. If you haven't heard the record by John Moreland, oh my God, it's called High on Tulsa Heat. It's extraordinary. I just kind of listen to anything with passion and conviction.
Rue Snider has been our guest here on this segment of the It's Your Turn program. He's a Butler native, a Butler High School guy, and he's making a career as a singer-songwriter. He's been out in the Southwest. He's in the Midwest right now, but he'll be back in Butler for a concert in his hometown at the Butler Little Theater this Saturday night, 7:30. You mentioned earlier where tickets are available. Rue, can you run down that list again?
Yeah, Snack and Pack, which is great. I remember going to Snack and Pack when I was a kid, you know, a teenager or whatever. I love Snack and Pack. Maze Music, who's been around forever in Butler. Thanks to them. Dr. Dan McCarty's office, chiropractor. Go get your back fixed. He's so great. Inner Beauty Hair Design on West Cunningham Street. Lisa's been a big supporter, and I'm grateful to her. Thank you. And Pets in the Park at Moraine Point. I'm grateful to those folks, too. thank you to everyone. Go get your tickets. It's going to be great. We're trying to fill this room up, Whitney Ann Jenkins and myself. We're each going to be doing, like, I don't know, an hour-ish, maybe a little over an hour. And it's just going to be a really fun kind of serious, not-so-serious night. It'll be entertaining, and I hope you come out. It'll be great.
Safe travel to you, Rue. Be nice to have you back in hometown. Good to talk with you again.
Thanks, Dave.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Rue Snyder, singer-songwriter. That's tough to you know, I've talked to people who are great musicians, artists. I mean, sometimes people make it. Remember when Marianne Cornetti was with us a couple of months ago? Now, there's somebody who's made worldwide fame. But when you're in anything in the arts, it's just like sports. You have to be so much better than everybody else to make it. So wish him good luck. But more importantly, and Ruth said this, you know, if you're doing what you want to do,